Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Emerging from the haunting echoes of gothic rock pioneered by Bauhaus, Love and Rockets swiftly conquered the college radio scene during the mid-80s. By 1989, the band had made a significant leap into the mainstream with their smash hit, So Alive, inspired by vocalist Daniel Ash's glimpse of a captivating woman across a dimly lit room. Join us this week as we're joined by Mustard Plug guitarist Colin Clive, exploring his enduring admiration for Love and Rockets. Colin's first-hand experiences with their electrifying live performances offers a unique perspective, having been an avid fan long before the band captured the attention of the nation. One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder? So Colin, welcome to the show. We are here today to talk about Love and Rockets, So Alive, something I never knew when my mom was listening to this cassette single in her Chrysler LeBaron when I was a kid, was that 3 out of 4 members of Love and Rockets are from the band Bauhaus. Now, Bauhaus, I gotta say, is one of those bands that I feel like as a guy who plays music and as a music fan, I'm supposed to know way more about than I do. Do you know a lot about Bauhaus, or do you just know Bela Lugosi's Dead like I do?
I definitely know about them. Yes. Very, pretty, okay. Pretty extensively. I would say Bauhaus and Tones on Tail. I don't know if you did that research. There's a band in between Bauhaus and Love and Rockets, which also included, I think it was just 2 of them. Anyway, it's basically members. It was kind of a transition band from Bauhaus to Love and Rockets, called Tones on Tail, which is an excellent band as well. So
knowing that piece of the history makes a statement from Daniel Ash make a lot more sense, which is like, to jump ahead in the story a little bit, the band breaks up in like 1999, and then they do a couple one-off shows in 2007, 2008, and I guess he was being interviewed at one point. And they were like, so does this mean Love and Rockets is back? And he said, I've been playing with those guys for way too much, like way too big of a part of my life. I need to play with different people. Like, sure. Because it probably at that point, it's probably been, if you're looking at the beginning of Bauhaus up until the end of Love and Rockets, that's easily 2, maybe even 3 decades that he's been playing with the same 3 guys. Like, I'm sure he just was like, I want to see what other people can do with music.
That's not that long.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, you're talking to two guys who have played with the same guys for several decades, maybe pushing 3.
So I'm over 3. I'm at 32 years right. or something like that. So I feel his pain. There. Look, I'm right there with him.
And I've only ever been a solo artist, so it's fine.
There you go. Hey, before we get into this though, to my point, are there any artists or bands? Now, Bauhaus is one of them for me. I have a list. I thought about this ahead of time. Are there bands or artists that you guys feel like you're supposed to know about or supposed to know more about, but you really don't?
I'm trying to think now, because there's definitely bands that when their name comes up, I'm like, I think I'm supposed to know and like that band more than it's a lot of 70s classic rock. There's a lot of 70s classic rock bands that have like huge fan bases that like to me feel like, well, I mean, this show is a perfect example because up until we did a Grateful Dead episode, that was the Grateful Dead for me.
That's on my list.
Yeah, I was like, this is a band I think I'm supposed to like more than I do. And then I became a fan doing the episode. But
yeah,
I think there's anyone else.
I had some others. If these spark any ideas for you guys, if you would agree or not, here's my list of bands I feel like I'm supposed to know way more about. And I might even, if I was in a conversation of peers talking about these, I might even play it off like I know more about these bands than I actually do. So one of them is Sonic Youth. Now, Sonic Youth,
yeah.
I really love Bull in the Heather, like their biggest song of the 90s, and I had that cassette tape, but I don't go deep into their catalog. I don't know a lot about Sonic Youth. Mudhoney is a band I feel like I'm supposed to know a lot about, and I don't. Arcade Fire, I feel like I'm supposed to know a lot about them because they like win Grammys and stuff. I don't know a lot about Arcade Fire.
I don't know anything about them.
Wilco.
See, Wilco's great. I like Wilco a lot.
I don't know much about Wilco. This might be sacrilege to someone who plays in a punk band. I don't know much about Social Distortion, minus like the two hits I know. Don't know a lot about Social D. I'm not much of a metalhead. I don't know much about Iron Maiden.
That's a good one. I mean, I'm just kind of a recent studying Iron Maiden. Like I would, like my friends have loved them, everybody's loved them, but they would for sure be on the top of that list.
I would say in the same vein as that is I maybe 3 or 4 years ago started my deep dive into Iron Maiden, but I still feel like I don't know nearly enough about Judas Priest, who I think is the other side of that coin of like the falsetto vocalist and like the kind of like precursor to what would become thrash metal in the later part of the 80s.
I do have some Judas Priest info, but for some reason Iron Maiden skipped by me. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I think because by the time like 80s and 90s hit, Iron Maiden was way more about the logo of Eddie than like songs being on the radio, where Judas Priest, at least you had Beavis and Butthead singing Breaking the Law.
That's true.
So,
like, Beavis and Butthead was the gateway to so much music for me. They were right in my wheelhouse. The couple others that I had on my list here, Frank Zappa. We've talked about that on here before. I feel like people know lots about Frank Zappa. I think I know more about Frank Zappa, the guy who went on TV and spoke out against censorship, than I know his catalog by far. Slayer is another one.
This all kind of makes sense, though. These are all artists that have like pretty extensive catalogs. I mean, these are like long catalogs, pretty much everyone you listed. So it's hard to get, or it's easy to get lost and kind of just lose track for sure.
True.
I would say. So it's okay. I'm just saying it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't feel that bad. The one I feel bad about, and I'm going to get called out hard on this one by a lot of people, is David Bowie. Like, of course I know the David Bowie hits, but I feel like that's an artist I'm supposed to know like the back of my hand, like the Beatles or something, and I really don't.
Chris, I'm going to say one that I think both of us have admitted to in the past that you didn't have in that list, is for how deep my knowledge of the Beatles goes. Like, knowing the ins and outs of every one of their albums and all the B-sides and all that stuff, I know maybe 1/5 of that much about the Rolling Stones and the Beach Boys catalog. I know the important songs by those groups, but they're both groups that the super fans will tell you, like, oh, the singles that you know are literally the worst songs by the Stones and the Beach Boys. Like, you need to listen to the more bluesy or the more experimental era of those bands.
The Beach Boys, I know a good bit, but the Rolling Stones, no. Caller, are you a Rolling Stones guy?
Not really. Like that, I would put them on that list for sure. I definitely know a bunch, but I'm far from kept up by any means.
There's people, when I listen to like a Marc Maron episode or something and he starts talking about the Rolling Stones, oh dude, another one. One more I could put on here, and then we'll get to Love and Rockets, believe me. This might be shameful once again. I don't know a lot of Dylan. When people talk about Bob Dylan, I'm like, well, I know his big songs, and that's it.
But what about Kiss? That's the real question.
Oh, that's a good one. That I mean, Matt knows a lot about Kiss, I bet.
I would say I know more than a non-Kiss fan and less than a Kiss fan. Like, it's like that weird, like I'm in that middle level where it's like, yeah, I got like a couple of their albums, but I have like the albums that everyone tells you you're supposed to own by Kiss, mm-hmm. as opposed to like the diehard Kiss fans that have like the bootlegs and every record that they've put out over like 40 years and, you know, Kiss memorabilia and shit like that. It's like, well, I got the Detroit Rock City album.
I could imagine, especially when I could imagine at the time going to a Kiss concert was probably a lot of fun, but to listen to them now, it's not that enjoyable.
Stop
for me.
It. It's still
you
fun.
Like Kiss a lot.
I do.
Okay, you do. You're a Kiss guy.
But
God gave rock and roll to you. That's all that really matters.
By nature, I'm kind of a makeup era Kiss. So like once original members left, I kind of completely lost it. So I'm kind of a new convert to latter day Kiss. It took me a while to accept that. But I'm learning too, and I've learned to appreciate it for what it is. So
the Church of Latter Day Kiss.
Yes, I mean I'm like. A flag waving Kiss fan, and I'm still discovering, like, you know, or kind of learning to appreciate the later stuff. So it's, you know, it happens. Madness is another one for me. Like Madness, I could walk around saying Madness is the best band in the world. Like, but there's a ton of albums, kind of middle period to later stuff that I just either you didn't know existed. A lot of them were import stuff that just kind of got lost. You know, in the US and stuff like that. So
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of those bands where, you know, obviously I was really young when Madness was at their peak popularity or whatever. But every time I hear a Madness song, I'm like, God damn, they're good. I mean, even Our House is such a good song. It's so musically interesting. And I think it's one of like the best singles of the 80s. Yeah, I should listen to more Madness.
And now, you know what? Actually, perfect segue here. Every single song I listened to by Love and Rockets, I thought, why don't I know more about this band? Because this is so my shit.
Really?
This band is so my shit. Oh, yeah. This is my type of 80s. Like, it is. And I read they started off, they were trying to do like a gothic rock thing. And then they kind of started to meld what was happening in underground rock with pop music. They're kind of credited as one of the early versions of alternative rock. And like, I hear it, like I listen to it and I'm like, I get how the Love and Rockets album fits into like the early REM records and like Pretty Hate Machine and like all of these mid to late 80s artists that were so hard to pin down. But like there was a rawness in the lyrics and like a uniqueness in the sound that like a dude like Kurt Cobain or the guys in like Mother Love Bone or whoever else were listening to that stuff and being like, what is this? This is what I want to play. Cause every single song I hit play on, I was like, this song's great too. Just kept adding it to a playlist.
Yes. That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. That's why we're here, to appreciate Love and Rockets.
I've also walked away thinking that they're probably the most punk band to show up on that shitty punk compilation commercial.
Oh, they're on it?
They're on it, yeah.
Punk. Who were some of the other bands on that were
Huey Lewis, Men at Work.
Right. Some of my favorite punk bands. So Colin, you came to this episode as a Love and Rockets fan. Is that correct?
Absolutely. 100% nice. Super fan. We'll call it super fan.
Wow.
I wasn't expecting that. Yes. Yes. That's they're awesome. Hugely influential to me. I appreciate everything about them. They're cool.
I love that.
Cool band. So, and I'll admit I was a little worried when I presented this to you both and you kind of just referred to the 90s punk compilation or whatever it was was the only knowledge of that. And I think having your mom play the tape in the car or something like that.
Yeah. It has just come up so much in this show, that compilation, because I've watched that commercial so many times that anytime we talk about an artist that's on it, I'm like, oh, the beloved group from the punk compilation.
Well,
but this was great. This group was, let's dive in because there's so much to talk about. I love this so much.
Matt, this song kind of falls in that era that you refer to as like your blind spot. Not a blind spot for me, because this was, I was discovering music at this point. This song,
and I was three.
Yeah, I was 8 or 9. I was 8 or 9 years old when this came out. It is true that my mom had the cassette single of this. I remember this song being everywhere. I remember this song being huge. And I thought, we usually get to this later in the episode, but I think it's really crazy. This song went to number 3 on the Billboard charts. This was in August of 1989.
Oh, can I read this? Because this is the greatest top 5 we've ever had on this podcast.
I do want to say that this song should have been a number 1, but it was held out of the number 1 spot by 2 songs from 2 movies, 2 movie songs that are both amazing.
Yes.
Colin, do you know what songs held this from going to number 1?
I do. I don't.
Here goes. The date was August 5th, 1989, and these were your top 5 songs on the radio. Number 5 was Martika's Toy Soldiers.
Oh,
fucking banger.
Total jam.
Number 4, Richard Marx's Right Here Waiting. Beautiful ballad. Love it. Number 3, the song we're talking about today, So Alive by Love and Rockets. And then, God damn, I love that these are the top 2.
Me too.
Number 2, On Your Own by Bobby Brown
on
from the Ghostbusters.
On Our Own
by Bobby Brown from the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. And the number 1 song in America was Prince with Bat Dance from the Batman soundtrack. No Party Man, but it's still a pretty good song from the Batman soundtrack.
Held out of the top spot by the Bat Dance and On Our Own from Bobby Brown from the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. The song where he literally has a verse where he raps the plot of the movie Ghostbusters 2. which has to be so frustrating for Love and Rockets. Granted, I love On Our Own. And one of the things I was thinking about On Our Own today, and one of the things I really love about that song is the first thing he says in the song is, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. And I feel like there's never been a truer lyric spoken at the beginning of a Bobby Brown song.
Chris, you should campaign to start every Punchline song with that from here on out.
Yeah. If you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself. I think it's so true. Colin, to put us in that era, to put our minds in what's going on in music, here are some other songs that were popular when So Alive was at its peak. Once Bitten, Twice Shy from Great White was popular at this time. I Like It by Dino, which I listened to last night and I sent the link to Matt. Like, that's the way it has to be, because that's the way. That song's so good. Cold Hearted by Paula Abdul, the Cold Hearted Snake song. Sexy music video. If You Don't Know Me by Now from Simply Red. Hangin' Tough. This was the New Kids on the Block, Hangin' Tough era. End of the Innocence from Don Henley. Headed for a Heartbreak from Winger. Angel Eyes from Jeff Healey Band. 18 in Life from Skid Row. And If I Could Turn Back Time from Cher were all popular at this time when Love and Rockets were at their peak. I would say that's a pretty loaded Billboard Hot 100 at the time.
While I agree, but what I also want to say is, going back to what I was talking about how I can hear how this was the influence on alternative music to come the following decade. Like, imagine you're a young Kurt Cobain or Eddie Vedder or whatever. It's 1989. You've kind of just recently formed your band. This is the only artist on that Billboard chart that sounds even close to what you're trying to do. So I'm sure this was like a huge influence on, like, we could do this. We could write this, like, personal kind of punk influence, but also, like, underground-sounding rock music that didn't sound like hair metal, and it didn't sound like dance songs, and it didn't sound like pop music, and it got to number 3 on the Billboard. Like, I could see how that was this giant, like, it's possible, and, like, all these bands fucking geared up to do it.
it was huge in like the college radio scene. I mean, I was straight out of high school into college, like, when their second album came out, which was kind of their first like more popular one, Express, which was like 86, I think, or something like that. And so, like, Pixies, Love and Rockets, bands like that, there wasn't a ton of the rock oriented alternative, but those were like big ones. So exactly what you're saying, like, I mean, it was hugely influential to anything that I think that followed that, myself included. Like, it was like different, you know. It was like Smells Like Teen Spirit before Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know. It was like, it was that important at that time, I think. Wow. To a lot of us. So it was cool.
Wow, you guys are kind of blowing my mind. I mean, I just never pictured that with this band. Matt, you keep dropping Kurt Cobain and stuff. Did Kurt like cite them as an influence or something? Because
I don't know if he did, but I'm sure if I looked into it, he did. Because like, there was an album that unfortunately came out well after Kurt Cobain had already passed away that was a tribute album to Love and Rockets. And like, the lineup is kind of the groups that we're talking about, like One Step, to go back to Madness, One Step Beyond That. But it was like the Flaming Lips, Better Than Ezra, the Dandy Warhols. Like, it was a lot of those bands that hit the alternative scene maybe 5 years after this song came out.
Yeah, I don't know if the fact that the Dandy Warhols did a Love and Rocket song makes me think that I guess, hey, look, Colin has the perspective of experiencing that and being influenced by it. So I can't argue with it. I didn't hear it in the song necessarily, but maybe now I do.
Well, this is a later one. So that's right, probably why. Right. Like, yeah. I think for us, like for these bands that we're talking about, the influence came from like the 86 album or that one right after it, Sun, Earth, Moon. Gotcha. So 86, 87. This one came out in 89, which was like simultaneous with probably like who we're talking about, when all those bands were doing, had already been influenced by them, is my interpretation.
Right. I searched, did Kurt Cobain like Love and Rockets on Google?
You're the first person to ever Google that. Congratulations.
This is true. But while that didn't come up, there was two things that came up. An NPR album, or an NPR article that says Love and Rockets psychedelic train ride of So Alive laid the foundation for alternative rock to come.
Okay.
And then also, because I feel like this is also in that same wheelhouse, there was an interview where Kurt Cobain spoke about how strong the Replacements were an influence on his songwriting. And I feel like if you were to tell me that in 1989, like, the Replacements, Love and Rockets, and the Pixies all did a show together, I'd be like, yes, that makes sense. Like, okay. That like makes complete sense to me. Okay. So I'm sure it was in his general wheelhouse of college rock that he was listening to.
All right. I'll accept
it. I agree.
Yeah. And I'm not saying like, oh, this sounds like Nirvana. I'm saying like, if he was listening to college rock and this was a college rock group that suddenly had a number three hit, that would mean something. It's the same thing with like, if you were a young punk rocker and all of a sudden, like if you were like a Kerplunk Green Day kid and all of a sudden they're like playing Woodstock and all over MTV, like, you as a kid also trying to form a band would be like, damn, they're like huge now suddenly.
And if you go back, like, I mean, as again, this is the song we're speaking of, or we will eventually be speaking of.
Welcome to One Hit Wonder. We like to dance around the song.
We don't even have to. There's so many better songs, so I'm just going to lay it out. There's a bazillion better Love and Rocket songs, but a lot of them are like heavy. I mean, they do some heavy, cool guitar, like alternative. This So Alive's a little, you know, it's light. It's a dance kind of track.
Even their Temptations cover, their first like kind of single was a cover of Ball of Confusion by the Temptations. And I was like, God damn, this is heavy. Like, it was not what I expected it to sound like when I hit play on it.
Yeah, like, Daniel Ash is one of my favorite guitar players. Like, he's not, like, super, like, flashy in a normal sense. He's kind of, like, a creative, do-his-own-thing sort of thing. He uses, like, the Ebo a lot, which I've never used one of those, but,
love,
like, that's kind
Ebo.
Of more, yeah, that's, like, his thing, is that. But, like, he's a very creative, simple kind of guitar player. But, I mean, some of these older songs, like Mirror People is one, it could be Sunshine. I mean, they're kind of punk songs or heavy, fuzzy, alternative grunge songs. I mean, so I, no doubt all these bands were like influenced by that. So
Colin, I'm so excited that you, as a guitarist, are saying that Daniel Ash is like an influence, like one of your favorite guitarists. Here's why I'm saying that. I feel like we've had a lot of episodes in a row where the guest was like, we're like, oh, you chose this song because you were a fan. They're like, no, Matt sent me a list and I picked this one. You're actually a legit Love and Rockets fan. I'm excited to like learn. And I'm on the fence about them, honestly. I like this song, I think. I think I like the hit, which you're saying is not one of their better songs. I dove into a lot of their other stuff. Of course, I heard the Ball of Confusion cover. I thought, that's an interesting take on that song. It's not better than the Temptations version, but it's interesting. And now I'm excited to talk more about this. I do want to talk about the single. We could talk about the back catalog some too, but the single Daniel Ash wrote, and he said that he wrote it because he was at a party one Saturday night and he saw a beautiful woman with long brown hair on the other side of a dark, shadowy room. Very romantic picture that paints in your head. Minus the fact that he did not talk to this woman because he was married, but then he was infatuated with her for the rest of the weekend. He said it was like he knew her in a different lifetime, which it started making me think, like, I feel like that's a kind of popular topic of a song over the years, that I saw a sexy woman. that has been long a topic of, I was like, I know that's been a topic of so many songs. First thing that comes to mind is I saw her standing there. I think of Pretty Woman from Roy Orbison. A really funny one I thought about is, I'm sure you know this one, it's probably from the same era, maybe a little bit earlier, but Lady in Red from Chris DeBerg. Matt, I don't know if this is in the One Hit Thunder Facebook group or the Krista Makes a Podcast Facebook group, but what's so funny about Chris DeBerg to me is somebody constantly tries. We have it so you have to approve a post to go up. I'll go to approve posts and there'll be 10 in a row from a page called Chris DeBerg posting just a picture of Chris DeBerg. No text, just trying to post a picture of Chris. Like, why? Why are you trying so hard to post this picture of Chris DeBerg? That must be is that in the One Hit Thunder one? Maybe that's in the Chris DeMakes.
I don't know. I don't recall seeing that on either, and I have admin access to both.
Oh, but it's been in Chris DeMakes.
But here's the thing. I love what he says, where he says, I felt like I'd known her in a different lifetime or something, and I couldn't stop thinking about her. Like, I don't know about you. I'm the one that's sitting on this call, I assume, that's got the 17 years of being single under his belt, which was super fun. But like, I've had that type of experience where like, I'm at a show or I'm at whatever, and I see somebody, and before I even like have a sentence with them, I have like envisioned like a month of what a relationship would be with that person. And it's always a bad idea. Like, don't do that. Don't put that pressure on some stranger who doesn't know you. But like, I get that feeling where you just like meet someone. You don't even meet someone. You see someone and you're just like so hopelessly in love or desperate, even maybe, that you just imagine this whole thing, which I think makes sense why this song apparently like spilled out of him and the band in like a day. Like, it said he took a bottle of whiskey into the basement in the studio and just put together the chords and lyrics in 45 minutes. And then the bandmates came in and played the bass and drums, and they finished the entire song in 24 hours.
It's pretty impressive to go from writing the song to having the recorded version of the song done in 24 hours.
Yeah. They also said that this song was strongly influenced by two groups. T-Rex came up multiple times, that it was inspired by T-Rex, who we've done an episode on. And the other one that I heard about, and I was thinking about this when Colin was talking about how this is like kind of one of the softer, more chill songs in their catalog, was Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. Because I think you could argue the same about that song in Lou Reed's catalog, is like Lou Reed is like this very like kind of new wave, like early new wave artist who has this very chilled out song that's like the biggest song that anybody knows by him. And it seems like that's kind of the same story for Love and Rockets as well.
The Lou Reed comparison is, I hear that for sure. Hey, I can also add Lou Reed to my list from when we first started that I don't know. I should know more about Lou Reed. But the T-Rex thing, we did that episode about T-Rex, so I really dove into T-Rex. I guess I think of, when I hear T-Rex, I think of Children of the Revolution. I think of Bang a Gong. There must be this whole side of T-Rex that I don't remember as much, because when I hear this song, I didn't think of Mark Bolan or T-Rex. But
I think there's a lot that sound like that, like in the T-Rex catalog. But I also think there's a lot of Levin Rocket songs that sound like the song, the T-Rex songs you just mentioned, like the rock, okay, the rock songs. Like, for sure, like when I listen to Levin Rockets, and like Daniel Ash, to me, when I hear his songs, it feels like he's writing a lot of T-Rex, his versions of T-Rex songs, like hugely inspired and kind of from that, which I like. I love T-Rex too, so it's all good. And I don't feel like copies. It just feels like he loves that kind of glam rock kind of stuff. So
I think, because I was also thinking as I was listening to this and thinking, this is so good, this is clearly an influence on a lot of the music that came after, like, why are we even talking about this group theoretically on this podcast, which is a big question. And I think the biggest mistake that Lovin' Rockets made was immediately after this single came out, because they had toured so hard for it, because they finally had a hit, it took them 5 years to put out a follow-up record. And it's like, by 1994, all of the bands that you may have influenced have already started a slight downward trajectory. You know what I mean? Like, Kurt Cobain's gone. So, like, the grunge, that version of grunge that you were the most influential on has started to peter out. And now by 94, you're starting to see the rise of the bands that were influenced by the bands that you influenced. Like, he's like one chess move too far at that point. And I think that may have been the biggest thing to hurt the band. And then, you know, right before their last album, there was a fire that caused some legal issues for them as well, that kind of definitively ended the band. But I think that if they put out an album in 92, we wouldn't be talking about them on this podcast. I think they would have had another song that popped for them at that time period.
They also drastically changed their sound after this album. Like at hugely. Like, they basically went electronic, like, from this self-titled record with the big alt rock hit. And this was a pretty guitar rock, you know, it wasn't hugely experimental or anything. Like, it was a pretty accessible record for the most part at the time, I guess, in an alternative music world, yeah, or whatever. But right after that, every album, like three, I think there's three albums after that or so, they're all very like influenced by like later day 90s, like slow, like kind of chill ambient electronic stuff. Like The Orb, I think, is one of the ones that they cite as an influence and stuff like that. But just like real laid back. And I they lost me too. Like, I was pretty much done. Like,
that's what I was gonna ask.
Yeah. I mean, they almost lost me at this album with this song. Like, I really didn't love this song, to be honest. But I love
it's
them.
It's got a lot of ooze, ahs, and doot doots that I think bring the song down a little bit. But that's kind of interesting that they didn't even try to lean into what was the sound that they kind of helped create. They were like, all right, fuck it. Now we're going to go electronic.
And that was the thing. I mean, they were pretty, from album to album, they kind of switched it up. They didn't like stick with an exact formula. But that was probably the most drastic of all, was from this album to that. This was also a case for me, like, when this album came out, it was a perfect example of one of those times when, you know, you love this band. I loved them before that. And then this song got popular. Everyone around you and just all the regular people like started to love them, you know.
Yeah,
you go to the store, everybody loves them, and I'm like they're not my band anymore, like they're not cool anymore.
Once the football players were in the pit, I was out.
yep exactly.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code onehit50, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Put down that smartphone and listen to me. I'm Matthew Milligan, professional musician and lifelong Weird Al fan. Each week, I'm joined by professional podcaster and close personal friend, Matt Kelly, to take a dive off the deep end into the vast career of pop culture icon Weird Al Yankovic on our show, Weird Algorithm. Along with some very special guests from the worlds of music and comedy, we tackle every song, every television appearance, and every bit of sketch comedy Al has produced in chronological order, covering the good old days of My Bologna and Eat It, the fun zone of Tacky and White and Nerdy, and everything in between. As we go, we're ranking the songs, albums, and music videos in the hopes of creating the ultimate guide to a career bigger than the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. So the next time you're having one of those days stuck in a traffic jam wondering why does this always happen to me, just kick off your sneakers and stick around for a while because we've got it all on Weird Algorithm, available wherever you get your podcasts. And now you know. Was that enough references?
Did you ever see them?
I have. I've seen them quite a few times. And actually, one of my most memorable shows was them. It was probably 87 or something. Like it was the album, their second album. And it was at St. Andrews Hall in Detroit. Nice. I was in college. So I went there. And the thing that I remember most was it was a really like very technologically advanced show for like that era and that size of venue. Like it wasn't like a giant theater. And St. Andrews is whatever, 800 people or whatever it is, 600 or something like that. But they had like lasers and smoke, and it was very like, it felt very modern in a time that I didn't know what modern was then, you know, I'm just a kid, right, or whatever, but like it felt very fancy and science, sci-fi and stuff, like fancy lasers and stuff you don't normally see at shows. And they were cool, like they looked cool and they're wearing their sunglasses and fog and cool outfits. So like I walked away as if I had seen something like from the future, or like, you know, it was nice. It wasn't like anything else. So like that stuck with me forever. And the few bands do that to me, like The Faint is another band. Like if I see The Faint,
like The Faint,
if they sound like retro, but they also, their show and the music can also sound like the most futuristic, coolest stuff that's never been heard before at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what Levin Rockets did to me at the time. But yeah, I got to see him probably, at least 3 or 4 times. And I saw Tones on Tail. He did like a version of that a couple years ago, which was two of them, the drummer and Daniel Ash.
Nice. That's awesome that you got to actually experience at the time, even before the hit, you experienced this band. I don't know if we've ever had someone that had as much connection to the artist we were talking about as you do. You were there for it. Hey, I'm playing at St. Andrews in June. You think anyone you think anyone if I said on stage, I can't believe I'm playing on the stage that Love and Rockets played on in 1987, do you think anybody would care?
Detroit's pretty cool. Like, I mean, and St. Andrews is still cool, so I'm not gonna say no, you know.
True.
They still represent. And actually another one, did you read about the Bubble Men? Do you know about the Bubble Men? That happened at St. Andrews as well. So they have a tiny like EP side thing called the Bubble Men, where they dressed up as bees, like Whoa. Giant oversized bee costumes, and they like came out for their encore at that show, or maybe it was the one after that. But after their show, they came out, no one knew what was going on. They came out in these bee costumes and did like this weird rap thing, like but like kind of futuristic retro rap presentation of some sort. They did put out an EP, so you can find it if you want to check out the Bubble Men rap.
I didn't realize Love and Rockets was this cool. I really
didn't. They're cool. Yeah.
I got a little game for you guys.
Ooh, all right.
Do you guys want to play a game? Colin might crush you in this, Matt, because
there's probably a good chance he was alive during the time.
Because I'm old.
He's so alive.
So alive is what we should say. My game that I made for you guys is all about August of 1989, the time that So Alive hit the top of the charts.
I was gearing up to turn 4 in a month, but
I feel like you might do all right at this. Actually, when I look at the questions, Matt, you might do better than you think you're going
to. Okay. Listen, as I've said on previous episodes, I get into a good swing of things, and then it's a question about what current celebrity was born. And I can't, my brain just info dumps every young celebrity that I know.
All right. Look, it's August of 1989. So to buzz in, if you know the answer, Matt, you would say Love, and Colin, you would say Rockets. So if you know the answer, you could say either Love or Rockets to buzz in.
Okay.
First question. On August 11th of 1989, this horror movie starring Lisa Wilcox premiered.
Lisa Wilcox. Hold on a second.
I don't know who she is. He's cheating. He's looking it up.
No. I'm looking up in the sky. No, I'm not cheating. I'm going to say Love. And I'm trying to remember. I think this was part 5. I think this was part 5. Was it Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child?
You got it.
Yes!
It is.
I couldn't remember.
The first thing that shows up. You looked it up.
Colin, to be fair, Matt hosts a horror movie night podcast that he's done like 1,000 episodes of.
Oh, okay, there you go. So, fair enough.
Yeah, no, as soon as you said, and I do a lot of conventions, so I know Lisa Wilcox.
You've met Lisa Wilcox?
I've been in a room where she's at, but I haven't like physically introduced myself, no.
Oh. So, Colin, if you don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child was the one where she was pregnant and Freddy was getting into the dreams of her baby.
Yep, I actually just watched all of those recently, so.
I like that one.
Oh, that one's so bad.
Come on.
All right, question number 2.
All right, question number 2. Matt, you got a point. On August 15th of 1989, this American singer, songwriter, and actor who has 2 daughters with Sophie Turner of Game of Thrones fame was born.
Love.
Okay.
It's one of the Jonas Brothers. Is that Nick Jonas?
That is incorrect.
Ah, damn it.
Colin, do you want to take a stab at it?
I don't even know. No.
I mean, can I get a second chance?
No, you don't
Joe
get a
Jonas
second
chance.
Yeah,
right?
It's Joe damn. Jonas. Joe Jonas
was
Jonas born.
See, I don't keep track of the Jonas Brothers. That's not even
I just knew that one of the Jonas Brothers married Sophia Turner, and I could not figure out which one it was.
Colin, you don't know the Joe Bros? You don't know your Joe Bros?
I don't.
I don't know much about. I remember in like the mid-2000s, like really joking with my friends a lot about the Jonas Brothers. I should have just assumed that eventually they would be big sex symbols who everyone loved. I should have just assumed that was going to happen.
Joe Jonas actually has a separate project that we will be covering on this podcast one day.
Wow, okay.
He had a separate band called DNCE that had that song Cake by the Ocean.
Okay.
I remember. And then promptly disappeared.
Wow, okay. I remember that. Okay, let's get Colin a point. On August 24th of 1989, this former player was suspended from Major League Baseball for life.
Love?
Okay, go ahead.
Was that Pete Rose?
It was. Wow. How do you know a sports question?
It's the only athlete I ever hear people arguing if he should be allowed in the Hall of Fame and not.
Okay.
I don't like this game.
Sorry, it is hard.
This game is rigged.
Some of these questions. Yeah, I didn't think he was going to get that. I got two more questions.
All right.
On August 26th of 1989, this bearded NBA point guard was born in Los Angeles.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I don't know.
No. He does not have a beard. He was also not born in 1989.
Yes, he was.
He starred in Airplane a decade prior.
He has a beard. Does he have a beard? First thing you pull up, he's got a beard.
He was not born in 1989, though.
That's true.
This would mean I need to know a modern basketball player, I got nothing. Yeah, no, I'm out.
Sorry, guys. That would be James Harden.
Never heard of him.
Me either.
Okay. I should have known. I got one more question. I guess Matt won, but I'll do the last question anyway. I feel like Matt's going to get this one. I'm sorry.
It's 3 points. It's a three-pointer.
I'm sorry, Colin. I feel like Matt's going to get this one.
I was too busy at college just listening to cool music and drinking beer and starting bands and stuff, so it's fine.
Do you have any specific memories of what happened at that cool Love and Rockets show at St. Andrews? Like, a personal memory. Like, I went there with this person or this girl or this... I got too drunk on mojitos or something.
I remember we just would carpool a ton. I was going to Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, so it was like 2 hours away, something like that. And I had met a couple guys who I'm still friends with. They were like the year older than me in the dorms, but they were like a year older, but we were in the same hall. So like really soon I had met these two guys. They were roommates that liked really cool music. Like, I had kind of, my high school was actually cool, and I kind of got exposed to a lot of like 80s punk and stuff like that. Nice. So that was super cool. But when I got to college is when I got exposed to like a lot of the alternative stuff, or like industrial music and like the goth stuff, or like all of this, like, you know, like they got like Surfer Rosa or like the first Pixies EP or whatever, mm-hmm. when it came out. They kind of taught me a lot of that, and we were going to shows like across the state all the time. So like they were going to like Sonic Youth shows or Replacement shows or obviously Love and Rockets and stuff like that. So there was a ton of bands that I was fortunate to see like at that time. Sadly, I never went to the Sonic Youth or Replacement shows, which is two of my biggest regrets ever. Okay. I didn't understand them at the time. Like Sonic Youth sounded too like artsy and out of tune and weird to me, and Replacements were too like, I don't know, I just didn't understand them at the time, so I regret those. But I did go to a ton of good shows, so I mean, it was just a lot of like, that's what we did. Like every weekend or during the week, we'd drive 2 hours to Detroit to see something, and Love and Rockets was just one of them. So I don't remember exactly the event. I remember the lasers. That was it. They won me over with their lasers. So I'd never seen lasers before. You
know. Something to keep in mind, bands. Bring lasers.
Actually, I saw. Speaking of lasers, like I saw. What is it? Rat-a-tat. I was just past. I think for some reason I ended up at their show, but like they had so many lasers and they were super cool. So I must just love lasers. I don't know, but
how did I never think of lasers?
Yeah, what? Chris, you're missing out.
It's not too late.
It's not too late.
That is true.
I know.
Let's get to this last question.
Last question that Matt's going to be the only one. I feel like you're going to be the only one who has a chance to do
this. I'm ready.
I'm not even going to listen, so it's fine.
On August 28th of 1989. This American drag queen, real name Brian Ferkus, was born in Milwaukee.
Ooh, I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know drag queens.
I feel like
names.
I should know this one.
Yeah, because it's certainly not RuPaul, because they had a hit like 4 years later on MTV. I'm trying to think of some of the younger drag queens.
I thought you would have known this right away, Matt. You're a drag queen guy.
I mean, I love RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm just trying to think of who the young drag queens were. I'm just going to throw out the first name that comes to my mind of a young drag queen. Is it Adore?
It is not. It is actually Trixie Mattel.
I did not realize Trixie Mattel. I guess that makes sense. Trixie Mattel would be like 4 years. I thought Trixie Mattel was older than me for some reason, but okay.
These are all young person questions. That's why I lost this whole thing.
Oh, wow. young people rigged. Question like Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Exactly.
All the youngsters love that one.
That's right.
A little more of a set piece for you guys. What was popular at the movie theaters when this song was at its peak? The number one movie in the country was Parenthood at the time. Some other popular movies at this time were Turner and Hooch, When Harry Met Sally, Lethal Weapon 2, The Abyss, Batman, of course. The Bat Dance was the number one song. Uncle Buck, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Dream Child, of course, and some movie called Lock Up. Love and Rockets. They, in January of 2023, they made a reunion appearance at that Cruel World Festival in Pasadena. That thing was stacked. You know who it was? We had on Krista Makes a Podcast, we had the bassist of Modern English came on. I believe they played at that. And then Love and Rockets did a tour in support of their appearance at Cruel World. I have never heard of like doing a tour in support of another show, but I think that's pretty cool. So they have played recently, and that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that they're keeping it alive. Okay, well, before we each give our verdict, I think I know what Colin's verdict is going to be on whether this was a one-hit thunder or a blunder. I do want to talk about Mustard Plug. I want to talk about Mustard Plug with you for a second. I know that, you know, this is about Love and Rockets today, but if anyone hasn't checked out yet Mustard Plug's 2023 album, Where Did All My Friends Go? It's out everywhere you stream music. It's not even like 1989. You don't got to go. You should go to a record store and buy it, but you can instantaneously listen to it on anything and everywhere.
I think what you're trying to say is that we here at One Hit Thunder love Mustard Plug, and we'd like for that album to rocket to the top of the charts.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's very
Did
nice.
You just think of that now?
Yeah.
I also know that Mustard Plug has some shows coming up. You guys are doing a Canadian tour and a European tour coming up, right?
Yep. It's both coming up here in the summer. So
they put on a hell of a show. I saw them at one of the weirdest concerts I've ever been to in Philadelphia in a very hot church basement with Five Iron Frenzy and Miscophiles.
Yes.
Where the temperatures got so hot that the power kept going out throughout the show.
Colin, did you know I talked about this when you were on Chris Makes a Podcast in the rap segment? I talked about this, but I, in fact, have danced on stage at a Mustard Plug show before. Me and my friend PJ were on stage dancing at Club Laga back in the day in Pittsburgh. I was definitely on stage dancing with you guys. So
that's
amazing. Mustard Plug, you guys are like my Love and Rockets.
Yes.
I saw you back in the day. You guys didn't have lasers, but you definitely had me on
still
stage.
Still don't,
dancing.
Sadly.
Is there anything else that people should know? I know the Where Did All My Friends Go album. I'll say that one more time. Go to Do you guys have mustardplug.com or did someone else
No, we got it. It's all ours, yep.
You're so lucky you have your band name.com.
That's cuz we have a stupid band name. It's easy. No one wants our names. Easy.
I love that Krista Makes, when he talks to me about you guys, just calls you Plug. Do people just call you Plug, or is that just the Krista Makes?
The Plug. No, the Plug a lot. What kind of happen?
The Plug.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's one of those. I don't know. It's one of those things. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That name
you got anything
surfaced.
To plug concerning Plug?
No, just we have tons of shows. Yeah, I mean, all the dates are on the website. One of our coolest things that always gets reverted to, but a lot of people don't know about it, we have a show archive. So you might want to look up the exact date of when you danced on stage. That is in the show archive, and you could find the exact date, what bands we played with, stuff like that. So our trombone player does a good job of keeping that accurate.
That's awesome.
as well as he can. So
who did you play with? Who was the number one band you played with? I know you were talking about that.
Was it Planet Smashers? Might be the Planet Smashers.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see. It looks like there's a chance that theplug.com is still available. Just throwing that out there.
Go get it.
There's no way. I can't believe that's still available. Yeah, somebody, I'm going to grab that too. It's going to be worth millions one of these days.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my retirement.
Love
right
and
there.
Rockets, Thunder or Blunder? we'll start with Colin. I think you're going to say that they're Thunder, right?
Absolutely. There's no doubt. It's so important. Coolest band. They're still cool. Their solo stuff's cool. Their side projects are cool. I mean, this song is, it's so low in my list of favorite Love and Rocket songs. I mean, I've been like an alternative music DJ for like a long time, kind of as long as Mustard Plug. I kind of come and go doing that. And this song does make, you know, it's popular in a club environment. So it does a good job of stuff like that, but it's not, I would never choose this song as the song I would play by them if I wanted to listen to them. Even this album, but yeah.
What's the song? You're on the spot. What's the song you're going to play when you're DJing? If it's not this.
I mean, Mirror People is super cool. That's kind of a little too punky. I'm trying to remember what I play. I mean, that Ball of Confusion one's a big hit. It really depends on if it's kind of a mainstream-ish, you know, you got to play the, it's still the singles of some of these bands and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they have so many good songs and like their catalog is just fantastic all the way through. Even the chill, even when they went all electronic and got a little chill and stuff like that, I mean, they're one of those bands. Like I dropped them and I came back because I didn't like those when they came out. I was like, oh, they got boring and whatever. But I've come back and they're super cool albums. Like, I don't know if that's just me getting older and, you know, more accepting of chill music. I don't know. I don't know what it can't explain it. Or maybe I just, you know, appreciate the subtle nuances of something more or whatever. But they just do cool stuff. I think they're cool.
Cool. Stamping cool, a thunder cool, cool. on them, Matt. You're going thunder.
I mean, it's very rare that I like a band as much as I like this band doing the research. So this is definitely a thunder for me.
I came into this episode on the fence and just, I mean, Colin sold me on them. And now I'm looking forward to getting off of here and listening to some Love and Rockets. I got some stuff I got to do where I can have music on in the background. And you've intrigued me. I want to check out The Bubble Men? Is that
the Bubble Men? I haven't listened to The Bubble Men in a long time, but I mean, I don't know if it was a big hit, but it was interesting. And there is an EP of it, so you can check it out. I would say go start with Express. I would start with that album.
Okay.
I would say that's my favorite. Like it's edgy. It's got some like rock and stuff, but it still does. They do a good job with kind of more chill, like some acoustic elements and stuff like that. But that's, I think that one encapsulates everything the most.
Okay.
But I mean, I would start everything before this album. I would do the first three before this mainstream, whatever,
before they sell out
album. They sold out album.
Love and Rockets sold out. Bunch of sellouts.
But I still love them. It's okay.
Cool. I'm in. I'm going Thunder. This is a triple certified Thunder. Love and Rockets. Daniel Ash, if you're out there, check the mail. We just got to get this notarized first, and your certificate will be on its way.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of the band Punchline and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Keystoned off the Punchline album Delightfully Pleased. Be sure to check out Punchline.com for any upcoming shows, news, or releases from the band. Our podcast is on Patreon now. Find us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast for early access to episodes, bonus conversations, and a chance to vote on future songs for us to cover. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcasting app, and tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder. Jersey Shore, is Bethlehem the place where Jesus was born? Oh man, in nature at each other's necks, birds in the east and steel in the west.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.